We've got two guests on today. One has been in many roles on a help desk for energy companies in Canada, as well as a notable tenure in consulting. She joined ATB Financial and has been working with them for over 9 years as a people leader. Another started his career off at Best Buy and has spent over 7 years at ATB Financial, growing and moving into leadership roles within IT. Welcome to Ticket Volume, news and information for improving IT experiences, powered by Invigate. Welcome to Ticket Volume, Tammy Ward and Nico Miller.
Thanks very much, Matt. Great to
Thank
be here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for joining. So I wanted to get you both on Ticket Volume because I missed your session at Support World Live, and that's totally selfish of me to just get you on for that purpose only. But I really feel like the story that you were telling there is something that a lot of people are trying to go through, especially post-pandemic and looking forward, like, what am I going to do next? How am I going to grow the next help desk? How do I actually future-proof my help desk? And I love what you guys presented on. We've had a chance to talk about the topic a little bit, and you kept, when we were speaking about it, you kept mentioning the Google transition. So what is this transition? What sparked the change at ATB?
In about 2016, late 2016, our executives started conversing with Google, and the whole idea was, how do we take the organization to a new level through disruption? And lots of work with Singularity University had been done with from some of our executive teams, and just what does it take to disrupt? And through the period of cultural shift that we had had over the few years leading up to this, they decided we were going to switch to Google. So go off Microsoft. As you can imagine, that was very interesting for IT teams and polarizing, but they decided to switch to Google for collaboration. But really, a lot of it was to disrupt the way people work. So get people to think and work differently through intentional disruption. And so that was announced in January, and the switch was going to get flipped in July. And so there wasn't a plan yet. And so the creativity of our CPO, our chief people officer at the time, our chief evangelist, I guess he was at the time, Lauren Rubis, was, let's bring people from across the organization, a cross section of people from the organization, about 50 people, to bring them together for a month to plan how we're going to roll this out to the organization. So cross-section of levels of different types. So from a CSR, so a very frontline worker, to managing directors in the business. And everybody's title was left at the door and came into the room for a month of planning and going through personas, and the core of that group went down to Google and everything. And then once the rollout happened, we went into a time of adoption. So first it was the launch, and then it's adopt and master. And that's when Nico came into the program and was a product manager of really working with kind of docs, et cetera, and working with the organization around docs. So we emphasized collaboration. My role through the whole G Suite was facilitating the boot camp. But a big part was meeting with every executive, their executive assistants and board members, as many times as they really needed, to help them understand not only how to use the tool, but how to think about the work differently. So collaboration with Google, you put your raw material out there and people comment on it. That's really intimidating for anyone. But think about somebody who, as you move up in the organization, you want people to perceive you in a certain way. It's even harder. But our executive team really embraced the whole switch and change to Google for that perspective. So that's when, through that disruption, one of our VPs who was very involved in the IT side of the transition thought, how do we disrupt the organization from a support perspective? Because our outsourcer, well, they weren't doing anything wrong. They were hitting their metrics. But the organization, as you probably hear so often, is it sucks. It's the helpless desk, et cetera. And they took our desk side, which we had a contract that had been for 30 some years, and then our help desk, which had been for 10 years, and we insourced it all. And I hired the team. Nico was the first hire in 2018. The team was onboarded, and we took over all of the desk side within about a month, and then fully without the outsourcer by the first part of July. We had a bit of a breather for a few weeks, and then we went into 10 weeks of craziness to take over all the service desk, which we've been told would be an 18 to 24 month process, and we did it in 10 weeks. So it was chaos. It really was. There's no other. We had really good support around us, but it was still chaos, and our team just, they rose to the occasion.
What a project. Changing collaboration platforms, doing the design thinking, having executives take the time to sit and think about work, having someone run a boot camp to change the way that people are thinking about how they work, and then doing this transition of insourcing in an what I will call an unrealistic expectation for most teams. 10 weeks is insane. So let's talk about this a little bit, because obviously this is like a top-down, like I'm assuming the CEO and the CIO probably had conversations about this before it even started to happen. So this really top-down change. Talk about that. Is it value-driven? What are the values that guided this change?
Yeah, that's a good one too. I'm passionate about this. I came out of the HR space and back into IT as a result of this, and it's been absolutely amazing for me. Our organization is fairly purpose-driven. We had what was called the 10 A2Bs. Now we have our A2B IDs. Our CEO at the time and our new CTO, very driven around things like doing the right thing, belonging, working together across the organization, performance, of course, and major disruption can disrupt performance as well. And I think the executive teams as a whole and the board were very aware that there was going to be the ups and downs as it went. And when we actually went to Google, it was very much driven by our chief transformation officer at the time and our chief evangelist, who had been our chief people officer before, but he became the evangelist and culture evangelist for the organization. And so it was very top driven from the decision making. But because of the way they approached the rollout, it got everybody excited right from the ground up. Because when you see, if you're a CSR working front lines and you see representation on the planning committee of people who do your job, that makes a difference.
Of course, we just want to see ourselves represented. We want to see our values represented, our concerns, really, especially when it comes to a project like this.
Exactly. Microsoft is globally fit in with business applications. And so there was challenges to overcome that were clunky. Mm-hmm. And without the representation, we would have underestimated some of that clunkiness that could happen.
Yeah, when you get into the details, it's like, this Excel spreadsheet really does run my entire department. I'm not even kidding. Yeah. And how do I get that on Google Sheets? And does it have macros? Does it have the right macros? Does it support my unsecure macros that I really actually probably shouldn't be running on my machine?
That's right. And so we really needed the excitement and momentum of the aspiration to carry through the messy middle.
So talk a little bit about it. This is such a great example of what an opportunity, because you're taking your greenfield. It's a greenfield team. It's all new. You're literally starting from scratch. So talk about that. How does it start? What do you start with? And what do you change in those processes that you're starting with to make it better?
I started with hiring Nico so that he could look at process, because I'm not a detail structure person, and he really got to dive into some structure.
If you want, the definition of green, I think that's very much where I was at that time, right? and I think it was unique, right? Coming from the business and then getting an opportunity to start through that product management opportunity that I had, obviously learn about just the seeds of what it meant to support an organization. And then to be invited to participate in standing up, not just a service desk, but then the desk side teams. It was a unique opportunity, obviously, to learn about support and user support, obviously learn about leadership through Tammy, and then apply some of that mentality and like the values that came through with people from the business supporting the business. Getting to embody that in a sense, which was a lot of pressure, although I was probably too naive to realize it at the time. And then to bring people in. We brought people in from the business. We went out and we looked for new team members, and credit to Tammy and her mentorship on this one, but it was really about building a diverse team. People that understood different elements and components and could bring different things to the table when we think about end user support and what we would call internally our supporting our team members, so team member support. And I think, Tammy, I don't want to speak for you here. We got some of it right off your experience and intuition. And then over time, there was a couple things, I think because of the speed and the pace, and we just had to get people in and we had to do this, Matt, thank you. Not our words, but yours, unrealistic expectations. So we had to move fast. And there might have been a couple fumbles along the way, just as far as needing to get people in quickly. And our value at the time, it still largely is guided by get team members back to work faster so they can continue reimagining banking for ATB's clients. And so that speed was right there, even in our mission statement and our purpose. And yet it didn't always serve us well. And it took some time for us to start to get the capacity to look at, as much as that transformation was beautiful and wonderful and really unique, and we learned so much, we needed a little bit of capacity back to be able to learn what's the foundation we need to lay to allow this team and the support that this team provides to our end users to be sustainable and successful in the long run. Tammy liked to say the bar was so low, we could have tripped over it. So it's very easy to raise the bar, but then how are we going to continue to do that? Because obviously that becomes the expectation of the organization.
Good point. Something that not everyone thinks about, but you're switching from the way we do things to this new way of doing things. Now, how do we keep that momentum? How do we keep people feeling like they can continue to innovate and change and grow and learn and push each other? And that's totally fascinating. So let's talk about, because in your session description, you talked about a team playbook. Is that a thing? Is it a literal thing? Is it a guide? Is it part of the boot camp? Yeah. What is it?
So what we realized about a year or so in, we had to make an adjustment and hire in a new leader. So this is where it started to come together in terms of going out of what we had just been doing to get things done. And the initial hiring of the team largely was me hiring. I had other people in, but I had a long track record of hiring and I have good intuition around it typically, but I couldn't hand it off to anyone else because I couldn't tell Nico, why did I think this person would work when they had no background, no experience in IT and none of that, but I thought they would be just awesome. So I had a good intuition and I couldn't slow the whole team down by always having to be the one to do it. Like my leaders have to be able to hire for their teams. It happened when I needed to hire a new leader and Nico and I attended LeaderCast. So he was in Lethbridge at it and I was in Edmonton at it. And Patrick Lencioni, who I'm a big fan of, was speaking and he was talking about Ideal Team Player, which I had already led book studies for. But what we hooked into was the hiring model, the interviewing templates. And so we made a commitment that as we hired for this leadership position, we were going to stick to that process. So before anything else, we went through the Ideal Team Player with them. We also have made a commitment that we do no interviewing with less than two people. Typically, it's 3 to 5 people. And if someone can't be involved in the interviewing of all of the candidates, then they recuse themselves from the entire process. We need the same people through the whole thing. And typically, the same person takes all of the notes on the interviewing. So I know those sound like really small things, but they've made such a difference for us. We have leaned into this Ideal Team Player in such a way that now every leader on my team is able to put together a panel. They're really good about bringing in a diverse panel. We also have a guiding principle that we don't do our interviews in person. They're always done virtually so that everyone is in a separate room, but all on the same playing field. We don't bring them in person. We don't bring them in person at all. Like the first time they're in person is day one.
This is totally different from every hiring experience I've been a part of.
And we have had really good success leaning into that. And Nico can attest to the fact that I had to really discipline myself to follow the process. Now I'm so convinced that it has leveled up our hiring so much that I'm like the biggest advocate of follow the process, trust the process.
Ah, that's pretty fascinating.
And we were doing this pre-COVID. Like we started this in the spring of 2019. I am in very few interviews anymore, like very few, whereas I was in all of them before. So I love the fact that the team runs with it and I totally trust their decision-making. Yeah. Like we've just done such a great, I feel like we've built such a solid and the team is involved. So everyone on that panel is asking questions and listening for answers and asking clarifying questions. It's not one person asking all the questions. Mm-hmm. It's just that one person takes all the notes. So that it stays in the same voice and same interpretation. The panel always debriefs immediately following the interview so that you capture all of it.
That. You heard it here first. If you don't think that you can change your gut hiring process into a process that other people can follow, Tammy Ward will disagree with you.
I will.
So this is great. You've been doing this for years. It obviously has worked. You've built this great culture. What lessons did you learn? What would you change about how you got to this place?
That's a good question. Boy, I'm not sure I would want to change too much, even for the challenges along the way, because I think we've learned such valuable lessons from them. I think, as Tammy said, this is something we were doing before the pandemic by virtue of our team being spread across the province. And, you know, it's obviously continued to serve us well through the pandemic and, dare I say, post, although that's hard to say these days. You brought up the playbook comment, and I would say it's foundational values that we layer everything on what we know and what we're convinced of, and we've seen over time. We can teach people to do the account unlocks, the password resets, you know, all the work that a service desk does. But what we can't teach is these underlying values of humble, hungry, smart that come from Patrick Lencioni's Ideal Team Player. And we've paired that with The Five Dysfunctions of A Team, which is another book of his, and just how a team and ideal team players come together, work together. It equips the team to see the end user, no matter the technical issue that they're experiencing. So to be truly empathetic, to be understanding, to really lean in, to listen, to solve the right thing. We talk about connect and understand before just jumping in to act. But it also has really served us as we've built the team. And this is where the belonging piece comes in, and our organizational value of really fostering belonging and being champions of that. When things started to come up, the George Floyd situation, Black Lives Matter. We have quite a diverse team, both from experience. We talked a little bit about how people have different backgrounds, be it retail, from the business, be it technical. We also have a culturally diverse team. And so as these conversations were going on, and of course we're in Canada, but we're very much affected by what's going on in the United States. And we have many folks with an Asian background. And so when there was the shootings in Atlanta during the pandemic, we were able to accredit to one of our team members who really challenged us, why aren't we talking about these things? You know, we talk about vulnerability-based trust, right? Building that as a team so we can really lean in, care for each other, just as we want to care for our team members. So why aren't we talking about these? So we started to talk about them. We started using our all hands meetings to check in using the mental health spectrum from a course that us as leaders had gone through. So we were able to take the values and allow them to really be a foundation upon which care for the team, to ensure that the team was cared for in a time where they had to care for end users in a really unique way with what was going on. We had branches that were closing in response to provincial regulations. We had corporate team members going to work from home for the first time, even though we had been a fairly reasonably hybrid organization before. So with all of that context, we were able to really use these to support the team as leaders and encourage and coach the team to support each other as peers.
Well said, Nico. I think we had been talking about mental health. We've been talking about a lot of things as the pandemic hit, especially. We added some key components into our culture. So we felt like we had a pretty strong culture. But even though we're within the province of Alberta, we span the province of Alberta. And so we had grouping in Edmonton and a grouping in Calgary and then a grouping that was virtual. And as things go, people form their connections with their leader rather than or within their location. And so we implemented a daily 15-minute all hands meeting that was really focused on mental health check-ins. Then we had added the belonging pieces and we talked about, so we started incorporating things like, tell us about Ramadan. So somebody who is experiencing like going through Ramadan, different kinds of things that actually are about the makeup of the human being. We've had, and this is, I can say this openly because Ray is a big part of this. I will give huge credit to Ray on Nico's team who helped us with a lot of opening our minds. He's the one that challenged me on, you talk about everything, why aren't you talking about Black Lives Matter? He's a trans man and has really helped us open our minds and understanding around how to be a good ally. And I give him a huge, huge kudos. He's young and he's fearless in so many ways, but also incredibly empathic and compassionate. So it's really helped us feel free to ask questions. And me as a leader, like I spent a lot of time, I just started reading books and going and figuring out information so that how do I support my team member, but also how do I support the team as they're starting to open their minds and change? We're in a very conservative, post-Christian kind of area. And so how do you start to reshape how we see the world? to serve everybody better, serve our team members better, serve the people that our team members are serving better. Like, it's all a part of the human aspect of support. And, you know, one of the things that I think contributes to this, and I think why we've been able to hire well in addition to all of that, is we have a pool of candidates all the time. People connect with us from all over the organization. I know this person, or I would like to get into your area or whatever. And from my consulting background, I worked with the world's best recruiter. She was amazing. And she taught us this whole pool aspect. And so numerous times in a month, Nico or one of the other leaders is connecting with somebody just to have a connection. And then if they think it's a good connection, they run it through, they run the person through a bit of the ideal team player, not as an interview, but as just a kind of test. And then we keep them warm. So we just hired a candidate who was in one of our branches. We've kept warm for over a year, just finding the right spot for her.
Wow.
And then it came above. So that is, to me, that is about building that culture. Most, probably 90% of our team has actually been hired because of these referrals and the cultivation of that pool.
Wow.
So that helps to keep the culture alive. And again, every time we need to hire somebody, what we do is we don't go, okay, we lost a service desk person, we need to hire a service desk person. We look at what are we missing in the team? So now's our chance to hire. Do we shuffle things around and do we hire? What kind of experience, what kind of background, what kind of thinker, what kind of whatever do we need to hire in that spot?
Oh my gosh, that is fantastic. Instead of, oh, I lost a head of my headcount, it's what does the team need? What kind of person, what personality and energy do we need? Ah!
And we've given up headcount to other teams when we've gone, you know what, that team actually needs the headcount more to be able to support us better.
It's just beautiful. We used to go to support center training and there'd be 90% of it would be tech and the last chapter was on soft skills. You guys have flipped the scripts. It's all about people first. And then 10% of it can be like, here's how you run the automation you run. Here's how you unlock AD accounts. Here's how you unlock Google accounts.
Years and years ago, I heard a saying, like a long time ago, touch their hearts and their hands will follow. And I believe that that is true. I do believe that if you engage a person's heart and they feel cared for, they will go to the ends of the earth to help you out.
So true.
Because we don't have 24/7 on-call support from our team. We do now have another team that supports it. But numerous times people on our teams have stepped up and said, I got it. It's a Sunday or it's a Saturday. I got it. I'll show up. I'll meet somebody at the office and get them a new laptop.
Awesome. What a great topic. I'm so glad I got to have you on Ticket Volume to cover this topic. Where can people connect? Where can people find you?
So I'm on LinkedIn, Tammy Ward. You can find me there. Of course, I'm on all the other socials too.
Yeah. Folks can find me on LinkedIn as well. I probably need to adopt some of Tammy's greater activity on there. And they can find me under my full name, Nicholas Miller.
Okay, well, we'll link those in our posts. Thanks for being on Ticket Volume.
Thanks so much, Matt.
Thanks so much for having us.
And for our audience, thanks for hitting play. I'll see you around the way. I'm your host, Matt Barron. You can find me on Twitter and LinkedIn as Matt Barron. Don't forget to post a review and leave feedback. Follow us on your favorite podcast platforms. And thank you for listening to Ticket Volume, a podcast powered by Invigate.